For the recording timestamp, this will be the new GTLD update starting at 9 a.m. to 9:30 local time.
Right, good morning everyone and welcome to the Sunday GNSO working session. We are going to kick off this morning with an update on the new GTLD program, which will take the form of a brief update from Christine Willett and an opportunity for Q&A. So I'd encourage all of you to be prepared, willing and able to ask any questions you see fit, both from the councillors and from within the room itself. These are the GNSO working sessions, and we welcome contributions from anyone in the room. Right. Good. So we're good to go. We'll start the recording, and this is the first session of the GNSO working sessions on Sunday. New GTLD update. Over to you, Christine.
Thank you so much. Good morning. Happy to be here. I thought I'd start with just a few brief comments on the new GTLD program and then open it up for questions. Cyrus Namazi will be joining me in a few minutes. I'm sure there are probably questions for him as well around the registry agreement and the RAA. I'll speak more towards the progress of the program, the evaluation progress. Since Beijing, we've been making steady progress on evaluations. We've released initial evaluation results through priority number 1200. We have had a very large number of applications successfully pass initial evaluation, only 13 applications eligible for extended evaluation. The other large activity in addition to evaluation that we've been supporting is the objection process. Although staff is not involved directly in processing objections, we certainly support the DRSPs and track and administer the progress of the objections that they are handling. There were 263 objections which were accepted by the DRSPs, and just this past week, perhaps even overnight, there have been more resolutions posted, but the objections, the DRSPs have come to conclusion on four of the objections this week. So that work is progressing well. We are looking ahead. We've spent much time in the last several months becoming operationally ready and capable of moving forward with the other phases of the program, extended evaluation, community priority evaluation, and auctions, as well as getting prepared to move into the contracting phase. So we are implementing enhanced systems, staffing up, and implementing procedures to move forward with that. On July 3rd, after the registry agreement was approved by the NGPC, we initiated contracting information requests, basically invited 31 applicants, the 31 applicants of the top 50 priorities who were eligible to move forward to contracting were invited to initiate the contracting process with us. And we've been working with those applicants since. We expect to extend additional contracting information requests to more applicants after the Durban meeting. So we're making steady progress. The rights protection mechanisms, particularly the Trademark Clearinghouse and URS, are moving forward steadily. We're hitting our milestones. I'll be speaking tomorrow about some specific dates, but we're very much on progress there. There are operational readiness mechanisms, our SLA monitoring, our eBro program, et cetera. Those are also very much on target to be ready by the time we delegate the first new GTLD. So that's, in essence, a quick update of what's happened since Beijing.
Thank you very much, Christine. I would very much encourage any questions, thoughts, comments from the room as well as the table. So if you have things, I'm sure there's many things that are stored up in people's minds. So let's hear from all of you. I've got Jeff and then Adrian.
Good morning, Christine. It's Jeff Newman. I have a question on the dispute resolution and objections, and I'm wondering what kind of oversight ICANN has on. Let me go to a little background here. So we are part of an application for a particular string, and that string was objected to by the independent objector in front of the ICC, and we were quite shocked at the bill we got from the ICC at the estimate. So just so everyone in the room knows, for this particular string, the bill was $190,000. So we all had to put up the three bidders for the string, even though the case was, quote, consolidated. Each one of the bidders had to put up $190,000, and we'll have to wait the fate of that. I'm sure when, as most of us expect, the objection will fail, and ICANN will have to pay those fees, which I think is pretty exorbitant. So as we contemplate future things like the PICDRP and others that have dispute resolution providers, so two questions. Number one is, what is our redress right now for getting issues about the what I will call is nothing better than extortion of these fees at this moment for the objections? And the second thing is, what protections will we all have in place against all of the third-party resolution mechanisms that have been created as part of the new GTLD process? Thanks.
Thanks, Jeff. We had actually received a number of inquiries from applicants as well as objectors on the fees for a few of the community objections and the limited public interest objections being managed by the ICC. Those two types of objections did not have fee limits in the applicant guidebook. And my understanding, not having been here at the time, but as no one had ever arbitrated such types of proceedings before, that these were complex issues, and the community was unable to conclude what the appropriate limit might be, although the string confusion objections and the legal rights objections were, fees were stipulated in the guidebook. What the ICC has communicated about their fees is that they are utilizing preeminent jurists to arbitrate and manage these disputes. So they are using a fee, an hourly rate of 450 euros, which is analogous to what, probably lower than what some of these jurists get in public fees, but that is what we are being charged. We are seeking, and we've requested the ICC, personally, staff has, to provide more detail about their costs, so that we intend to make that public, what is included, what is not included, and the basis for those estimates. Although the objections themselves were limited in the length, one of the other complicating factors is that some of the objections also had attachments of length of 1,000 to 2,000 pages. So there are the limit to the objection was not limited on the exhibits. So there is, in some cases, quite a bit of material to review for the arbitrators. We're not insensitive to, and I understand $190,000 is significant. So we're trying to get as much information as we can make public about those fees. The other thing that, as you said, the prevailing party will have those fees refunded. So that is one point. The other point is that in order for the ICC to move forward and all the dispute resolution providers to move forward in processing of the objections and not to have to go back to either the applicant or the objector to seek additional funds, that they have estimated, from their perspective conservatively, they do not expect that they will need to go back to any applicant or any objector for additional costs. Even any costs that are not, any expenses which are not used, those fees would also go back to the non-prevailing party if the objection is underspent, and those fees are underspent. So in terms of redress of fees, the situation is if you prevail, you'll get your fees back. We're trying to give you clarity on that. I think given once we get through this round and we have more information on what community objections and limited public interest objections take and require to arbitrate, we will in future rounds be able to put some better parameters around the scope of fees for such objections going forward.
Quick, just, but, okay, so that's okay, I guess. But I guess you didn't answer the other question, which is, now that we know and you've selected providers for the other dispute resolution processes like the PICDRP, or I don't know if you've selected them, the PDDRP, the RRDRP, and others, what steps is ICANN going to take to ensure that everyone knows going in what the fees will be? And I will say that the letters that we got, just as a side note, the letters we got from the dispute provider said it's $190,000. That's their conversion now. But we obviously reserve the right to come back to you. This is just an estimate. We think it may take more, and we'll come back to you and ask you for more. So that's what it says. So there's no bound. And, you know, just translated, $190,000 at that rate is about 316 hours of doing nothing but this one objection, which, put into perspective of a year, you know, it's one-sixth of a year of doing nothing but this one objection. So when you put into the perspective of, this is no way a conservative estimate, 450 euros is not a low price. It's what's done is done. We can't do anything about it. But, you know, ICANN needs to do, before just abdicating to third parties these things, ICANN needs to do a much better oversight over those types of things. Thanks.
Jeff, I would agree. I think ICANN, the community as a whole, we have to take into account just what limits are reasonable for such fees and the expectations we have of our service providers. I will tell you, as we look forward to these other dispute resolution providers, the PICDRP, registry restrictions, TMC, trademark, et cetera, we are certainly taking this into account, as we did with URS, looking for limits and structure around fees that provide more clarity. What I've been told is that the ICC does not expect to have to go back for more fees. And most of the ICC range of objections I saw was anywhere from 30,000 euros to 150,000 euros for either a one-person or a three-person panel. So 300 hours could be 300 hours across three different panelists. So I understand the point, and we will certainly be taking it into consideration as we go forward. Thank you.
Adrian.
Good morning, Christine. Adrian Kinderis on behalf of International Domain Registry. Just hearing your spiel this morning, going through the different facets of the program, I didn't hear pre-delegation testing. This may indeed now sound self-serving. However, you did note that there are CIRs going out and continuing to go out, and with that, hoping to get more and more contracted parties. The next clear step then is pre-delegation testing. Are you able to provide us some status update as to that and those newly contracted parties' ability to book in their pre-delegation testing and get that moving? Be helpful. Thank you.
Absolutely. So the pre-delegation testing, we've gone through a beta mode. We have made a number of iterations through enhancements of the pre-delegation testing, the criteria. We've gotten a lot of good feedback from the registry stakeholder group in working with the group on what's working for the test, what types of information needs to be communicated. So I believe just on Friday we published some revised specifications around the pre-delegation testing. We will be moving into a production mode on pre-delegation testing next week, and applicants will be able to, contracted applicants will be invited after they have signed the registry agreements to schedule their appointments on pre-delegation testing. And previously we've said for some time now that we will have capacity for 20 pre-delegation test slots per week, and that is still the case.
Thank you. Can I do a follow-up, Mason, please, if you don't mind? Will you be scheduling those pre-delegation production tests via prioritization order or in order of contract signing? Prioritization number order from the draw prioritization, just to be clear. Otherwise, first in with respect to contract signing?
So the intention is to take all of the applicants that have signed contracts in a given week, in a given time period. Right now we're anticipating a week. It could be larger tranches, to invite them to participate. And then they would, anyone who signed a contract in a given week will be invited to schedule their pre-delegation test appointment. For they will either be given the opportunity to select the next available pre-delegation testing appointment or to select a pre-delegation appointment after the first available after a date of their own choosing. So it will be on a weekly basis that they will be able to participate.
So if I understand, you're batching within a week. So I get within that week, I get prioritisation numbers 3, 20, 60 and 100. So I imagine the prioritisation number that is 3 gets to choose the first spot and so on and so forth. So prioritisation number will matter within the batched week.
That's correct. Now, that said, it's not like dinner reservations. There's not a 9 a.m. slot and a 10 a.m. slot. There will be 20 for the week. So we will engage with 20 contracted parties to proceed through pre-delegation testing, and we will take that batch through pre-delegation testing in a week. Some parties will be able to move more quickly through that based on how they progress through the beta testing, if they're ready. There's a documentation. They have to provide documentation. So it will be based on how quickly the applicants move through that phase of work.
And so I imagine your very first batch, therefore, will be everybody up to that line in the sand, which is when we're ready. So that first batch could well be a month's worth of contracted parties coming through.
Correct. And then those appointments will be scheduled based on priority number.
All right. We're almost to our time with Fadi, but we've been told he's running a bit behind, so we have some extra time with Christine, if that's okay. Okay. Jeff?
Yeah, on the thanks, Christine. On the contracting information request, the CIR. So you've done the first 50, which is good, and then you said the next, however many are going to be after Durbin. Do you guys have like a set amount? Like, is there anything we could advise our clients to say? Okay, you guys are number 400 and whatever in the priority. You should expect the CIR around X date. You know, I got to say the process on the initial evaluations was fantastic. It was predictable. It was, you guys did everything you said you were going to do on releasing those, and so it was great. We can advise our applicants that, you know, on this day you're going to see it approved or whatever. Is there any kind of predictability around the CIRs too?
Yes. So although I'm stealing thunder from someone's presentation later this week, the intention is the week we return from Durban. I want to say that's the Wednesday the 24th is my target date. Target, not a commitment. And we intend to release contracting information requests for those applicants who are eligible to proceed to contracting through priority 108. So we want to get all of the applicants, all of the IDN applicants, into the contracting process who possibly can. Then we are working towards a schedule where we invite 40, based on priority number, 40 per week through priority number, in batches of priority, 40 priority numbers. That will go up or down based on our need to, one, we need to kind of fill our pipeline. So everyone who, we've actually only had a handful of applicants who have been responsive to their contracting information requests. We're asking for quite a bit of information, so we anticipate it will take time for some folks. So we want to fill our pipeline. Once we fill the pipeline, we may ratchet that number down. But if we have more capacity, we will increase that number. I, too, appreciate the predictability of the IE schedule. So my expectation would be if we are going to deviate from that 40 per week pace, that we would communicate that ahead of time. And everybody would know we were either going to move up or slow down a bit.
Other questions from counselors or anywhere in the room? Yes, sir.
Greg Shatton from the IPC, speaking in an individual capacity. I'm not sure if you're the right person to ask this question to, but I've noticed that in the process, a number of applications have been pulled over for extended evaluation, and nearly all of them have been for failing on the same point, which is failure to provide financial statements. And it appears from an unscientific review of this that they are private companies, privately held companies that are not in the habit of disclosing their formal financial statements. And as far as I can tell so far, there haven't been any resolutions to any of these extended evaluations or anything informal that's been worked out to allow these to move forward. So I'm curious what is being done to try to resolve this issue for companies that I think have a staunch policy of not putting their financial statements in the hands of any third parties, but which are, you know, in at least one example that I know of, you know, incredibly solvent and well-funded organizations that have, you know, easily the capacity to run this, probably to, you know, out of their petty cash drawer, but yet you're giving them zeros because they're not giving what was initially expected. So I'm wondering how this is being resolved. It seems something creative is necessary. I'm curious about that. Thank you.
Thank you, Craig. Yes, there have, without speaking about specific applications, which would be inappropriate for me, yes. The results are public. There are a number of applicants who have not successfully passed initial evaluation based on question number 45, which is about the provision of financial reports. And if an applicant doesn't choose to provide financial reports, then it would be impossible for them to it would be problematic for them to score, have a passing score on Q45. My view is that as the shepherd of this program, we are endeavoring, ICANN and staff are endeavoring to follow the guidebook as much as possible, and it would not be our place to get creative on the criteria of the application. So our panels are very much following the criteria in the applicant guidebook in terms of evaluations. I think that the applicants will need to make some determinations of what they do intend to provide. Question 45 of the application was known and understood and published before the application window was open. So
you're telling companies that clearly have hundreds of millions or billions of dollars in net value that they can either give to you information they give to nobody, or they can kiss their $180,000 plus everything they've thrown into this goodbye?
Well, I certainly am not saying that. What I'm suggesting is that they, all applicants, had the criteria of the applicant guidebook, and if they want to pass evaluation, they know what the criteria are. I would actually suggest that if there are creative ideas and if the group has suggestions, we would love to hear any creative solutions and options around this.
But are you suggesting that the applicant guidebook is sacrosanct and that somehow what is in there cannot be worked with to achieve the appropriate goals? If the goal is to show that companies...
Absolutely not. I think we've shown that there have been a number of... needed to be a number of minor modifications from a practical execution standpoint.
So then I guess the question is whether there are minor modifications that can be made in this case so that companies that are clearly highly solvent and well-funded can survive this without giving you information they've never given any third party.
So, I would welcome suggestions and feedback on that very sincerely.
Thank you.
Thank you, Greg. Mike Palage.
Thank you. Christine, you were asking for creative solutions, and perhaps you may consider the following. Over here. There we go. Turn to your right. you were asking for creative solutions, and one of the questions that I've previously asked is with regard to how one might want to transfer an application with regard to corporate restructuring. Obviously, the intention of not prohibiting an application was originally to prevent gaming, someone from selling an application. But in connection with corporate restructuring that happens, this may be a solution because I did work with a number of applicants who, recognizing the ability of having to disclose financials, set up a separate entity. So, if you will, keeping with the letter and spirit of the applicant guidebook, this may be one path forward. And again, I would cite back to cases where ICANN did provide criteria about changing applicants and technical backend providers. They have not yet provided any additional documentation on those procedures, and that may provide a path forward for those applicants. So I just put that out there as a constructive idea.
Thank you, Michael.
Thanks, Mike. Thank you, Christine. Fadi has managed to join us now. We much appreciate the time. Fadi, and welcome to the GNSO weekend sessions. You and I have talked previously, and we've discussed with the council what areas you might cover, and so we're very much looking forward to hearing from you on a couple of those. So I think it's probably best that I just welcome you very warmly to our meeting. Very pleased to have you here, and we'd love to hear from you and this time pose a couple of questions.
Good morning, everyone. Good to be here. I hope you had good trips. I heard a lot of difficulties with people getting stuck in different airports, and it's been a tough transportation week for many people, but glad to be here. I personally had a chance to arrive a day early, by the way, and I was supposed to go to Pretoria for some meetings, but they did not happen, and then for the better, because I ended up going to Soweto and spending the day in the township. If you have a chance to do that, I know we're all heading to the safaris, but if you have a chance to do that, that is a very, very valuable visit. It was very, very moving for me. And I'm sure it would be for any of us to go there and see how these millions of people in that one township really continue to carry on with an amazing legacy. Nelson Mandela's home is there where he lived before he was incarcerated, and Tutu's house is on the same block, one block with two Nobel winners. It's quite remarkable. Worth the time, worth your time, if you have a chance. It's obviously in Johannesburg. You invited me to talk a little bit about some of the things happening at ICANN. I think tomorrow you'll hear me bring up a couple of things, so I thought I'll just share them with you and give you some heads up. Most recently, you've heard about the creation of the new generic domains division, affectionately called the GDD, as if we need yet another acronym, but the Generic Domains Division, or unit, whatever you want to call it, but it's essentially a unit within ICANN. Akram Atallah was promoted as president to run this unit. And it's a unit that will focus on our work with the contracted parties. This is important because it changes a little bit the focus within that unit just on this and to make sure that our relationships and service to these parties is well done. So from an organizational standpoint, just so you appreciate, Akram had three operations areas that he was responsible for. He had the administrative operations, he had the technical and security operations, and thirdly, he had the operations of working with our contracted parties. I don't want to call them business operations because they're not, but they're kind of our more industry-oriented operations. And it is that third area of operations that we believe this new division will focus on. And we believe it will be the biggest growing part of our operations. So Akram will lead that. Susanna Bennett, sitting here to my right, is our new Chief Operating Officer. You should all meet her. And Susanna will be running the administrative operations, so HR, finance, meetings, administration, facilities, procurement, risk, all these things that are typical in an administrative operations role. And then finally, we just put an ad on our website looking for a new leader for our technical and security operations. Kind of a CIO, if you want to call it that, but someone very ops oriented, very operations oriented, and they will own, you know, DNS ops, IANA, security, IT. All of this will be under that person. So in a way, Akram's job was split in three so that he can focus all his time on the needs of our contracted parties, and that's the new GDD division. Akram has his own staff in this division. And this is new as well. So, for example, he now has a chief contracting counsel, his own counsel, his own legal work. Now, it is, of course, part of JJ's team, our general counsel, but he has counsel focused entirely on the new division. Similarly, he has Christine, obviously, running operations. You all know Cyrus quite well now. Cyrus is responsible for building relationships and support the relationships with many of the contracted parties. This is an area where, frankly, we had some staff, but we were very thin. And now we're going to build that staff so we make sure we are working closely with our contracted parties and supporting their needs and understanding their needs. So this new division will remain embedded in ICANN and will share some of ICANN's common services such as IT and other things. We will share some things. Obviously, we won't duplicate everything. But it's important for you to appreciate that this is a clear division of ICANN's work. Within that division, we will also build a new nature of a relationship with the contracted parties. So whilst at ICANN, our end user, our public responsibility is to the broader end user, the internet user, current or future internet user. In that division, our end user is really the registrant. This is the group that, in a way, we build all the activities within that division to serve. We do it in partnership with the registries and registrars. But the actual end user of that unit is the registrant, and we need to, all of us together with the registries and registrars, pay attention to the needs of that registrant. They are the ultimate user of importance to the GDD. And so this changing of the focus, well, I wouldn't say changing, but at least this accentuation of the focus on the end user being the registrant will also color the type of relationship we will build moving forward with the growing number of contracted parties. And I've been, frankly, with Akram searching for the best way to describe that relationship, and we've tried everything from, you know, the registries and registrars are our partners as our distribution channel, they're our partners as our franchisees, we looked at different models. And frankly, the model that we're most comfortable with now is what I would call the licensee model, that in a way you are licensed parties that are being asked to work within that licensed space to serve the same end user we all wish to serve together. Again, there's no finality to this. This is, we're opening a dialogue with you. We're opening a conversation with you. But at least the tone of that unit will focus in that area. So I think enough on the GDD. I just want to switch focus a little bit to the strategy work. Is this where you want me to go a little bit?
Yes, thanks, Fadi. I mean, my sense of this and the conversation that we had as a council in terms of the meeting with Fadi and that I've had with Fadi as well is that my sense is that these are some quite substantial changes happening at both an organizational level and at a strategic level. Mm-hmm. And I think we need to know and understand those, and we need to know and understand the impact they may or may not have on the GNSO and on policymaking within ICANN. So for me, that's the context in which we discuss these things. Fadi, I don't know if you'd be willing and happy to answer some questions on perhaps on this now before we go into the strategy side. Maybe we should have a little bit of dialogue on that. And then, Jeff, did you want to ask something?
I guess it's more of a comment. Thank you, Fadi. I just want to say it's good to hear the talk of the partnership that the end user is our customer. I think when it initially came up and you had made a presentation, I don't know, you travel so much, I don't know, remember where in the world, you had said that that the end user was your customer, and this wasn't intended at all, but it almost made it sound like we, the contracted parties, weren't looking out for the end users, even though they are truly our customers, right? And it's good to hear that. Oftentimes I've seen in the past that there were certain comments made from people in ICANN staff saying, well, we're looking out for the end user, we're looking out for the customer, but it was never this cooperation that you're talking about, this partnership. And I think that's it's good to hear that. It's good to when you talk tomorrow about that it's really that partnership that they are both of our customers, that we're not the contracted parties, as you came in the very first day you made a speech, we're not evil, right? There are customers. We're trying to do everything. If we don't have them, we have no businesses. We have no registrants. It's no good to us, right? So I just want to thank you for clarifying that and for making that today.
If I could, just to follow on what Jeff said, I think you can ignore my words. Watch my actions for the last year and how we partnered, how we worked with the registries and registrars. You know, tough discussions, of course, that's normal. If there are no tough discussions, something is wrong. We have to have tough discussions because we can't all be exactly of the same mind. But I think the intent that I'm pushing through staff is that, first of all, these end users that we claim are our public responsibility, they're really not our customers. They're really your customers. In other words, we are toothless without a partnership with you. We have to work with you. You are the one who, at the end of the day, will ensure that these end users are served properly, not us. We will not achieve our goal without partnering with you. That is super clear in my mind and in my staff's mind. Now, we also have the responsibility to the public and to our larger mission to make sure you do your job. And therefore, we have to do certain things, but that can be done in a partnership way. Not in a regulatory-type mindset, but rather in a partnership way. But it has to be clear that we have that responsibility to the public at the end of the day, but we can only achieve it through partnership.
Thanks, Fadi. I've got a question from Wolfgang.
Yeah, thank you, Fadi, and good morning. Jonathan has already put this issue into the context of policy and implementation, which is a key issue, and we discuss so. My first question would be, is this seen as this new unit for implementation? And what is? I think our understanding in the GNSO Council is that GNSO and its council, which represents the various constituencies, is the policy-making body. And insofar the question is how this is related, this unit, to policy making for this field and then implementation. And my second question goes to what you just said at the end with reference to the registrant and the end user. The individual users are an important part of the end users, and the NCUC is representing the individual internet users. So my question would be, what is your idea or what are your instructions that this new unit, if it's so dedicated to the registrant, how this unit, should cooperate with NCUC? I think we have some activities we had here in Durban just the days before the ICANN meeting, a very good outreach meeting, the first African school on internet governance was driven to a high degree by the NCUC. So that means we target exactly the same group, so it would be very natural to be innovative also in developing some working structures with this unit so that we avoid duplication or other unneeded competition. Thank you.
First of all, congratulations on the IG school here. I heard feedback that's very, very positive. Thank you for great effort. really more of this is needed, and yes, indeed, we should align ourselves. You brought up two things. I'll answer them backwards. So your second point, it's a discussion or a conversation we must continue to have. I don't profess to have the answers fully to this, but my sense is that while ICANN's mission as a whole must be focused starting with the end user, meaning every end user, whether they're a registrant or not, because they come to the net and they expect the DNS to work in a certain way, and they rely on the overall ICANN community to deliver that value to them in a consistent, secure, and stable way. So yes, our ultimate mission is to ensure every user is served by our responsibilities well. In this new unit, however, I want to focus them on the registrant because they are very much acting as the people who service and manage the relationship with the contracted parties who are serving customers who happen to be the registrants. So, I mean, this may be splitting hairs, but I just want to be clear that from a perspective standpoint, when they sit with a contracted party, they need to make sure that the needs of the registrant and the commitments we have to the registrant layer are being met. It doesn't mean they ignore the rest of the users, but I view the rest of ICANN as being extremely focused on the broader set of users, including, obviously, you and all the parts of your community. On your first question, which is more subtle and more important, I think I would like to tell you that from my perspective, everything that happens in Akram's shop ought to be about implementation. Policy is made here, period. They should be about implementation. But then, you know, having watched and learned as much as I have in the last year, and Chuck's voice is right in my head, we have to make sure that as we move into implementation, this is not siloed. We don't have an implementation silo and a policy silo, because that leads us to all kinds of difficulties. So I have put on the goals of David Olive and Akram, this is their personal goals, as well as on the budget, people to support processes that would ensure that these two things are not put in their own ivory towers. That as policy is being developed, we have staff, and not just, you know, bless her heart, Karen Lentz, who's one person, but we're giving Karen more people and more staff so that we have folks involved early on in understanding how this policy will move into implementation. But once it moves into Akram's shop, it should be all about implementation. If we think they're doing something that is beyond implementation, which will happen, you know, you will perceive they're doing something, oops, this is something we should decide on. Why are they deciding on it? Then we will take it up on here, where we should, and tell them, no, this is something we need to decide. But I'd like Akram and his team to be literally focused in their work. It doesn't mean they will be hidden. Everything they will do will be transparent, and we'll be able to inspect it and look at it and give them input, give me input and comments. My job is to ensure that they don't end up in their little ivory tower of implementation, not listening to our input, that they're getting into a policy area. So that's my view of it. I don't know if this helps Wolfgang, but I'm open to learn and to listen from you if you have different ways for us to make sure that happens well.
Thanks, Fadi. And I know I've got a couple more people who would like to talk to you on this, and then I'm conscious of time. I don't know when exactly you have to leave. I suspect it'll be relatively shortly. Let's hear from Chuck, and I think Steve would like to ask something, and then we should give Fadi the opportunity to talk a little about the strategy, which we've also asked him to do. So fire away, Chuck.
Thanks, Jonathan. Chuck Gomes from VeriSign. Fadi, I appreciate the fact that we should look at actions and not words. That's certainly true. And there's one area that has always bothered me with ICANN before you came as well, but I think it maybe has been demonstrated even more after you arrived. And that is that there's a lot of words given to the public interest and ICANN serving the public interest and partnership, et cetera. And yet the one thing that it has continued in ICANN, the corporation, is that the number one priority is always protecting ICANN, the corporation. That comes before public interest. That comes before partnerships. And in my opinion, ICANN has never really been willing to step up very much at all in terms of assuming accountability for some of the things. The accountability is pushed down to contracted parties, to registrants, to everyone else except the corporation. And I've never seen any meaningful movement away from that. And in my opinion, it would be very helpful if there was shared accountability, and that takes lots of forms. So I point that out because that's an area where I think, if anything, the corporation has even become worse at in the last year. Thank you.
Chuck, I invite you to send me a list of the areas you think we can increase our accountability, and I will be responsible to get back to you on that. I think corporations like yours and others, you know, obviously do everything to make sure they sustain and live. We should be focused on the public interest. And if you could send me a list of these things, given I know your experience, I would really appreciate it. It would give me a good roadmap, and I will share back with you how I'm addressing these things.
Thank you, Fadi. Steve, and then we'll move on to the strategy component.
Thanks, Fadi. Steve Delbianco with NetChoice. Your answer to Wolfgang about end users really caught me and troubled me a little bit. An end user, whether sending an email, firing up an app, or bringing up a website, is an ICANN customer. They are at that point doing resolution of a domain name. And the resolutions, not just registrations, but resolutions are half of what we do. And we do it through a series of both contract and non-contract relationships with ISPs, the root servers, and the zone file maintenance. And I think that the availability of resolutions is part of why you need to see them as customers. But the second is the integrity of those resolutions. ICANN's done a lot of work before you got here on things like DNSSEC, but under your watch, we have to not screw up the integrity of resolutions through things like name collisions and issues that could come up with things like dotless search, dotless domains, if that comes up as well. So Wolfgang is talking about non-commercial users. We're talking about commercial users. I guess that's the whole world, right? You're either commercial or non-commercial. But in that respect, those end users doing resolutions are your customers as well.
It's a very fair point, Steve. And as I said, I'm still working on these definitions. So very, very much welcome the input. And I'll talk to you, actually, because you just said something important. But again, resolution management doesn't happen in the GDD. This happens in the rest of ICANN. So I'm trying to come to a distinction. But you're right. At the end of the day, we will touch the end user, but they need to know kind of where I'm going to hold them responsible. So, but very much welcome that input, and let's continue that dialogue on it.
Okay, thanks, Fadi. I think we'll close that there. It's clearly, you know, you've stimulated a couple of thoughts here, and you're getting the feedback. I know you'll appreciate. So that's good. Let's move on then from this significant changes in the operations of ICANN onto the strategic plan, because for me that's also very significant, the fact that there's an overarching strategic plan starting to develop for the next few years. And I'm personally, I feel that we have a responsibility to ensure that the GNSO is well knitted into the creation, architecture, and development of that plan. So I think a very good starting point is hearing from you where you are so far and where you think it's going, so that we can be, you know, up to speed and engaging with that.
Well, you all know we started a strategic planning conversation with all of you in Beijing. And we opened it, if you remember, with this short video, and we invited people to participate. We created a portal for that. We've had a number of workshops with various members of the community, even the staff and the board separately, et cetera, to get input. We're still in the high getting input phase. There will be another major push here in Durban to get more of your input into that strategic plan, and I will show on Monday the timeline of that plan. So just to give you a sense, we expect to have a strategic plan done towards the end of this year, maybe early next year. That plan would be, as I have asked our team, to keep it down to 5 pages. So this is truly a strategic plan, not an operating plan. And once that strategic plan is done, which would clearly lay out some important framework for who we are as a community, then we will move into an operating plan phase, which I think will take probably a good chunk of the next calendar year, or at least half of it. So strategic plan, then operating plan. Strategic plan view is 5 years, short document, high level. Operating plan is only 3 years, lots more detail as to what we need to accomplish in 3 years. And then subsequent to that, we'll have our yearly plan. And again, this is something very standard. Most of you have done this in your companies. It's just that we needed to get into that cadence at ICANN. 5-year strategic plan, 3-year operating plan, and then a yearly plan and budget. That's where we're heading. I really need your help to get this done. This is not about ICANN staff. This is about all of us doing this as a community. Now, as I was watching what's coming into that strategic plan, it became clear to me that there are 4 or 5 areas where we needed some deeper insight, where we needed to bring some focus together. So I'm going to propose to the community tomorrow that, and I'm proposing to you now as well, and I very much welcome your feedback, that we establish 4 or 5 committees that would inform elements of the strategic plan and the subsequent operating plan. And again, these would be committees formed in the same fashion ICANN has done in the past. I looked at the history, and it seemed like we formed things called the President's Strategy Committees, and I think that's the same format I will use, with some differences. For example, I will put a very clear time limit on them. They shouldn't last more than a year unless absolutely determined at the end we must, but hopefully less than a year, but no more than a year. We'll keep them small. I'm suggesting a maximum of 7 people. I will not allow board members on them. I will not allow staff on them. These should be community committees. So we would like to make these a place where the community informs the strategic planning and operating planning process. Informs is the key word. There are committees that give us input and advice. Let me walk you through the 5 that I have in mind, and then we can discuss. I'd love your input and feedback on these. The first one, partly to also address Chuck's real concern, is a President's Strategy Committee on Public Responsibility. So I would like us as a community to think through what does it mean for us to be responsible, to have these public responsibilities. What is the framework for that? What is the roadmap that gets us there? What things might we do in order to fulfill our public responsibility? Also, what is not part of our public responsibility? And how do we make sure we don't start becoming, you know, bigger than we should or doing more than we should? How do we focus our efforts on being truly responsible in that area? I have asked Ni Quaynor to actually help me lead that committee, and he has agreed to do so. The second committee will be one that would focus on our place in the so-called ISTAR system, the system of internet organizations, the ecosystem. I think I want us to step back 15 years after many of these organizations have been created, ISOC, the RIRs, you know, W3C, all of these internet organizations that form this kind of loosely coordinated constellation. I think we need to step back and think, really, what is ICANN's role in that constellation? And how do we ensure that we don't get out of sync with that constellation? And right now we do have some of these issues. ICANN is bigger, has more resources, is moving faster than the rest of the ISTAR ecosystem, and that's not good for ICANN, and it's not good for the ISTAR ecosystem. We need to be aligned. And so I thought of who could help me get that conversation going in this committee, and I went back to the person who came up with most of these organizations, and Vint has just agreed, Vint Cerf, to lead this committee. Third committee. ICANN has not had, and I don't know if Marilyn Cade is here, but this is one of the first things Marilyn Cade told me, we need a CTO, we need technology focus at ICANN, we don't have it. And it's true, we need more people. But again, ICANN should not have a CTO. I came to the conclusion it is not ICANN staff's place to have a CTO, but we as a community need to have a place where we discuss technology. Let's stop the kind of hush-hush, is the DNS going to survive? What if it doesn't survive? Should ICANN survive? I don't know. We should have this debate. And so I will be forming a committee called the Identifier Technology Innovation Committee to look at all of this. And again, I thought, who could help me lead this? And I asked who invented the DNS, and they said it's a guy called Paul Mokapetris. So Paul is going to be leading this. Fourth committee. We have a need to understand what is our place in the global internet governance space. What is the nation-state model right now itself is being challenged. Just look on the news, what's happening in Brazil, in Turkey, in Egypt, in France, in country after country. People are questioning the nation-state model. It's not my place to gloat about that. That's what it is. Reality is, there has to be a new model for internet governance that is not necessarily rooted in the nation-state model or the international organizations that are made up of international nation-states that come together. What is that model, and how do we evolve it? So I've been, in my free time, reading a lot about this, and tomorrow I will introduce for the first time the term transnational model. This is an actual established political science term, and it's probably the closest thing to what ICANN looks like. So I'm going to form a committee to look at ICANN's transnational multi-stakeholder presence and its relationship with the nation states and with international government organizations and how we're going to really make that happen. I don't want us to be defensive anymore. I don't want to go to one more ITU meeting and be defensive. What we have is the best thing around. I would like a committee to help me formulate this and make us more proactive and proud of what we have built and how we can evolve it moving forward. This is the only committee where I can't tell you today I have a leader. I am in discussions with several potential chair people. But it won't be an all-government committee. It will have to be a multi-stakeholder committee. But I can tell you, for example, that Pandit, the most recent chairman, CEO of Citigroup, wants to sit on it. So we have multiple people that are offering their services. This is a very high-profile committee, very high-profile committee. The last committee is probably the one closest to our hearts here, and it's a committee I'm calling the Committee for Multi-Stakeholder Innovation. Here, we need to step back as a community, and this will be very close to the heart of the GNSO specifically. So I think this is a committee where I must have many of you help me. This is a committee where we need to think about how we are structured today to make policy. How we make policy, how can we evolve this as more and more and more people will be engaged by Sally's team and Tarek's team. Sally and Tarek, before they started, we had 2-3 people in the world that are doing engagement. We will be close to 35 or 40 by the end of next June. This will bring a lot more people to fill the volunteer ranks. That's a good thing. Now, when they arrive, are we equipped to actually engage with them and have them participate in policymaking? Is the model to keep growing these meetings? Is it feasible for us to have 5,000 people show up at an ICANN meeting in 2 years? There are very few hotels on the planet that can do that. So we need to start thinking how we're going to evolve all of this. For this particular committee, I really went way outside the committee, the community, to find someone to lead it. And the person who will be leading it is Professor Beth Simone Novak from NYU. She was the most recent. She's an advisor to Cameron in the UK on how to evolve governance. She was the deputy CTO of Obama in the White House. She is the head of the Governance Lab, the most important global lab in New York, now funded by many universities to figure out how governance will evolve. She's also an advisor to the Italian Five-Star Party. She's an advisor to the German Pirate Party. She's known all these movements that are trying to rethink how governance occurs in the world. She was presented with six mega projects to focus on, and they decided on ICANN, including NHS in the UK and some major institutions that wanted Beth to focus all her energy on how we can rethink governance in this new era we live in. And she has agreed to do ICANN. I'm delighted by that. And I think you will all really enjoy Beth. But we also need to inform her because she's not a community member. So she will need all of us to be engaged in that effort. I emphasize in closing, these are committees that will inform and advise, and they're made up of you, of the community, and they will be open and they will be involved, fully transparent. Everything they do will be fully transparent, and they have no decision power. What they come up with will come back to us, not even to me, and they may lead, their work may lead to PDPs. It may lead to decisions we have to make. They are not there to make any decision or for me to take what they recommend and run with it. This is really for all of us to benefit. And again, they will inform both the strategic planning process, but because they will also, if you look at their charters, which I will announce and publish on Monday, their charters will also move into the area of how do we implement, not just how do we kind of build frameworks. So this is what I wanted to share on the committees and would welcome any input. If you want me to add a few more, to remove a few, if you have ideas, I welcome them on who should be on these committees. I'm extremely open to all of that.
Thank you, Fadi. I mean, my sense is that whilst you make reference to what's gone on in the past, there's some quite radical thinking in here and might be expected to come out of these committees and the work they do. So I would very much encourage people to absorb this, think about it, and bring back the feedback that you seek. Is anyone willing or interested to ask anything now? I know time is a little short, but if there are any immediate questions or comments that spring to mind, I think we should take advantage of Fadi's presence here too. Wolf Ulrich, and then Brian.
Thank you. Fadi, thank you very much. Very interesting to see what's going on, what you have in mind with that. So I understand those committees, you are going to pick up the leaders of them. The membership of those committees is up to the leaders, or how I can understand that?
It's joint between the leader and I. But that's why I didn't want the leader to run with it.
Okay.
I wanted us to talk, and I wanted to make sure I channel the community through that. So I have absolutely no names for the people on these committees. I need slates. So as I announce them tomorrow, part of what I will ask all of you to do is to start submitting. We have a person who will be building a set of slates for each committee. But they're not going to be done like, the GNSO can pick one person, the ALAC. We, frankly, instead, let's pick the right people. If any of you have input to that, I really would appreciate it. It would inform me.
Thanks, Fadi. Brian?
Brian Winterfeld, Intellectual Property Constituency. Fadi, thank you for joining us today. I just wanted to ask a quick question about some of the restructuring that you mentioned earlier. We understand that Akram's role has changed. We know previously compliance was reporting directly to him. Can you let us know if compliance will continue to report to him or if that is likely to change?
If you recall, Brian, I moved compliance under me at some point. It will remain under me. Not only that, but you see, I'm going to be quite frank here. I think our compliance function needed to be balanced. And it needs to be balanced by a good relationship team under Akram, so that compliance is measured, not restricted, not restrained, but measured by a relationship team. So if a contracted party is not paying, or we can foresee they will not be paying, or we see some issues, relationship management should solve a lot of that. And if we grow the relationship management function, which we have been, as you can see under Cyrus, this is really changing completely how we work with you and how we engage with you. Having said that, I need to give compliance its complete independence. So I kept them under me, number one. Maggie will attend the staff meetings of Akram, so she will be dotted line into his staff, but she reports to me, and she'll have the line to me. In addition, I will be recommending at this meeting to give compliance a line even directly away from me and Akram to the audit committee, right? So she has a mechanism to go and quote unquote say, you know, I'm being blocked by Fadi and by Akram. Should we both collude on something, which is important? So we're doing everything we can to keep compliance independent, but at the same time, I want to create a stronger relationship team so that we, as I told Jeff and I shared earlier, we truly are functioning in a partnership mode with you as much as we can. Does this help, Brian?
Thank you so much. Very helpful. And just a brief follow-up question. I know you talked about Cyrus's team underneath him growing the relationship aspect. I know in the past there was consideration of really having a more robust relationship team, and obviously particularly with all of the new contracted parties that are coming into the community, is there a plan to really increase that staff beyond they have right now?
He actually has the highest staff growth of any team at ICANN planned this year. He will have a lot, you can ask him, but he will have a lot more people, and he knows his new headcount.
Yes.
Yeah, this team is going to grow considerably. And it's important. We also just rolled out our new CRM system. We finally have a CRM system. We'll start doing the proper things to follow up and service. And he will have teams in Istanbul, in Singapore, so we will be able across the world to track what's happening with every one of our contracted parties in a single system, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So all of this is being done as we speak.
Great. Thank you so much.
Okay. I have just a closing comment after.
So I think Fadi is out of time, and we'll make just one last closing comment. I mean, I would just make two points. One, to thank him for coming along and sharing these things so frankly with us. My sense is these are big developments. These are big developments that we need to be aware of and engaged with, and providing the feedback he seeks on, because you would expect a dynamic-driven CEO to be changing operations and moving forward with strategy, which is exactly what he's doing, but we need to be engaged and involved with it. Thank you, Fadi.
Thank you. I just want to thank you as well for the opportunity to come, and if we need more time in the coming meetings, please let me know. This is very important, extremely important, I'm sure, for me, and I hope for you. The two quick comments I want to make. The GNSO seems to be having a kind of a renaissance phase right now. I feel it. I don't know what to attribute this to, but I'm going to attribute it to you because I just don't know. But thank you. It really feels great to see how the GNSO is working with the rest of ICANN. And I know there are many things we still need to sort, but frankly, I just wanted to commend you for the leadership, for the style, for the vigor, for the assertiveness, which I also respect and welcome. And I'm scared when I think of the decisions I made a year ago, given how little I knew. But today, a year later, with all the time you all invested in me so that I learn more, I clearly appreciate the GNSO's critical value in this chain. And I know a lot of focus has been on the GAC lately. But in no way does this take away from the vigor and the work that this body does. So I want to thank you for that. Second comment, I just came out of my review where the board sits me down and tells me what I screwed up on and what I did well on. And I will tell you one thing they told me that I didn't do well on. They told me that it's very important that the speed at which ICANN staff is moving does not become out of sync with the community. And that right now they feel that I'm moving faster than the community can move, and that's not a good thing. So the board admonished me about this and asked me to make a bigger effort, and I'm committed to that, not just because it'll translate into hopefully more pay next quarter, but because I believe that if I do not align with you on the speed at which we are moving, all of us lose. So you have my commitment on that. Speed is not my goal. My goal is that we as a community continue to do what we're supposed to do together. So you have my commitment on that. Okay?
Okay, so thank you again, Fadi. Thank you for your kind words. I would just emphasize that, you know, my role is as chair of the GNSO Council. The GNSO leadership goes a lot deeper than the council into the stakeholder groups and constituencies, but we are working well together, I think, and we'll do our best to work with you in these new initiatives. So thank you.